We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report for January 14th, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, Indicator, Illinois. In agricultural news, the CFTC has released its plan to pose additional regulations on commodities. We'll have this and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason reports on University of Illinois efforts to improve soybean disease resistance. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Thursday afternoon, futures settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat, 527, down 9.5. May, 538.75, down 9.5. July, 550.5, down 9.25. March wheat, CME Group, 527.75, down 9.25. May, 540.75, down 9.25. July, 551.5, down 9.5. March corn, 381, down 3. May, 391.75, down 3.25. July, 401, down 3.25. December, 415.5, down 3.25. January beans off the board today at 968.5, down 15. March, 984, down 8.5. May, 990.75, down 9. July, 996, down 10. August, 989.75, down 11.75. January soybean meal, 990, down 150. March, 299, down 150. March at 290, down 110. January soybean oil, 37.80, down 83. March, 38.53, down 48. February live cattle, 86.65, up 95. February lean hog, 69.05, up 7.5 on the day. And those are today's settlements in Kansas City and Chicago.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Learned Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Taking a look at AM 580 Chief Meteorologist Ed Keezer's two state highlights, he says tomorrow in northern Illinois, partly to mostly sunny. In northern Indiana and in central sections, mostly cloudy with patchy fog and freezing drizzle early. In the south, cloudy with patchy fog and drizzle, highs ranging from 32 in northwestern Illinois to 44 in the far south. Here is Ed's extended highlights. He says low-level moisture will create patches of fog and drizzle and freezing drizzle overnight tonight into early tomorrow. The freezing drizzle may create areas with slick spots overnight tonight into tomorrow morning. A wet weather system is still expected to pass by to our south over the weekend. The northern edge of this rain may reach portions of southern Illinois and Indiana Saturday night into early Sunday. Most of Illinois and Indiana will likely stay dry from tomorrow until the middle of next week. More frequent precipitation is likely from later next week through the rest of January.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave. I
want to begin our discussion this afternoon with your thoughts on how does the reports change what may happen in the markets over the next 3 months? In other words, does it change the seasonals in your opinion? Does it change how it might play out in some way because of the acre mix or whatever you want to talk about?
Well, I think the report definitely was what we would call as a game changer. It does, though, I think, put to rest maybe 2009 will never be put to rest because we had such a hard time getting the crop in, then we had a hard time getting it out, and there's probably still a great bit of skepticism whether or not USDA has the harvested acres correct and whether or not they have the yield correct. But, you know, I think at this point it doesn't make a lot of difference. They could come in here in March and maybe make some minor downside revisions, but I think the supply is known enough, it's large enough for the time being that I don't think we're going to really get the market too excited about running out of inventory. So I do think the market now is looking ahead, and the number that probably didn't get the least amount of talk was the winter wheat acres being down over 6 million. That really lays the groundwork now for much larger soybean and corn acres as we go down the road through the 2010 growing season. We do have, I think, some acreage conservation reserve acres coming out. So the market is focused on supply now. Soybeans, for example, they're basically focused on a large South American crop. And so far the weather pattern has been pretty ideal for Brazil. Argentina still has a ways to go, and of course, the last 2 years it's been the late season dryness that's dinged up the Argentina crop and threw everybody for a curveball. But the trade's looking at a big crop. We're looking at probably larger soybean acres next year. Corn demand is good in ethanol. Ethanol margins have been pretty good, but it's nothing fantastic. But we do have a mandate, but we're waiting on E12 or E13 or E15 to come forward to generate some demand on the corn balance sheet. Export demand is absolutely terrible. This break we did see a pickup of export interest and end-user pricing. So I do think this break in the commodity prices that we've had has stirred up some business, but we got a ways to go on that. So I think the market's going to be generally bearish. It's going to be focused on supply. Now, at some point in time, I don't think the market needs to rally to buy acres, but I do think the market may rally at some point in time on worrying about a timely planting, and only Mother Nature is going to tell us on that. If we stay in a wet type pattern as we go into middle March, I think the market then will probably begin to worry about a timely planting because we're so far behind with fall field work. And I think the soybean market, if there's no problems in South America, the soybean market could almost go into meltdown at that point because they would be the trade would be looking at a much larger increase in soybean acres on top of a record South American crop. And I think you could probably get things fairly bearish at that point in time. I think the big boogaloo still hangs out there watching the dollar. It does appear from a technical perspective. I can't give you any good fundamental reason that the dollar has made a low. We had a strong rally through December and early January. Now we've had somewhat of a setback. It looks like it's regrouping, ready to take another surge to the upside. And if that is the case, I think that will put all the more pressure on ag commodities, as well as all commodities.
In that U.S. dollar, is it looking to you like an up flag with the potential to maybe reach something around 82?
Yeah, it does look like we're wanting to work our way into the 80s, at least for now.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things that I'm thinking is that, you know, producers still have to market a crop, and many did not market very much yet. And I'm looking at 415 on the board for December right now. It's not going to float my boat too good on corn, especially if I haven't done any fall work yet, any prep work yet. Do you think that there will be a psychology among producers where they're going to say if the balance stays roughly the same, the ratio, or they look at the price for fall delivery for beans right now, which you can get over $9.50 still, heck, we'll just go ahead and get that locked in and drill into corn stalks?
I think there's been a much bigger increase appetite in soybean acres than one would think, because you know, we did have $10 beans offered for fall delivery, and a lot of people know that they were behind in fall field work. Instead of fighting it, a lot of people have switched over to soybeans. I know some of the longer-term thinkers have. They've sold their beans at the $10 level, and now they're just waiting around to plant them at some point in time. But I think there's a great percentage of people still kind of up in the air, depending upon how the spring weather pattern plays out. It's going to be a real interesting 60 days in here, because I do think there's a lot of wet corn in the bins that need to be moved here. So I do think there's going to be a big pickup of country movement activity sometime here before spring, because the quality of the crop is nobody's going to be able to really hold it unless the professionals are the only ones going to be able to take care of this crop, I think, as we go into warmer weather. So there is, I think, some pretty good country movement of old crop corn coming at us. I mean, you check around and look at some of what these market advisors have been telling farmers. You know, you got market advisors that are only, you know, 30% sold or so in here. And I don't know, I suppose you'll have to watch to see whether or not they start selling. And if they get everybody sold up down at the low, then maybe this market could go higher.
Do you think that that's a wild card, the quality of the crop, and that might be one of the key disappearance pieces come the balance of the winter?
Well, you're going to have to find some demand to generate enthusiasm in this corn market. Now, like I said, I'm always open for, you know, revisions. I suspect there's enough room in the feed and residual number in the supply demand table that USDA issued here earlier this week that any kind of tucking in of acres or changes in yield is just going to be it'll just be a smaller feed and residual use, and the carryout stay the same. And as long as carryout stays the same at these levels, it'll be tough to excite the trade.
What else are you keeping an eye on?
I'm watching the dollar. I think that is a key to see whether or not it is indeed did put in a bottom. Like I said, fundamentally, it's kind of hard to argue a stronger dollar at this point, because it doesn't look like the Fed's going to move anytime soon to raise interest rates. However, they have shot out a warning signal not to be too short money. But I think that's the key. The next big report, of course, now is going to be the the acreage estimates and what kind of buzz we got going into that acreage report. But like I said, there's upwards of 7 million acres to kind of find a home in here. And, you know, you could see that corn number maybe grow to 90, 91 million. You can maybe see the soybean acreage number grow, you know, up toward 80. If we would have a shot at an early spring, the market could get awful bearish as we go down the road.
Thank you, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. We have a pretty good website at WILLAG.org. All of our audio, USDA reports, and more go to it, WILLAG.org. In agricultural news, the top U.S. futures market regulator moved today to limit the role of big traders in energy markets, unveiling proposals to put a hard cap on the size of positions that dealers can hold, but offering a limited exemption for big financial hedgers. The long-awaited proposal is part of the Obama administration's push to overhaul financial markets, will apply to the four most traded energy contracts on the two major exchanges. But it remains to be seen if the limits, which it said would affect only the 10 biggest position holders if implemented today, are sufficient to satisfy lawmakers who have clamored for regulatory action since oil prices surged to a record $147 in 2008. A CFTC official says that if the rules were applied today, for example, the limit for NYMEX crude oil contracts across all months would be 98,100 contracts. The NYMEX's own so-called accountability levels, which were frequently exceeded, is 20,000 contracts across all months. The limits will be on contracts of light sweet crude oil, natural gas, heating oil, and gasoline blend stock across the same contract month groupings at 10% of the first 25,000 outstanding contracts plus 2.5% over 25,000 contracts. The rules are subject to a 90-day period of public comment before approval. Senate Democrats say they will oppose a bid by Senator Lisa Murkowski, a Republican from Alaska, to remove the Environmental Protection Agency's authority to regulate carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions. The target of Murkowski's amendment is an EPA endangerment finding announced by the agency last month that linked greenhouse gas emissions to public health concerns. Market analysts and poultry importers say if no U.S. poultry is permitted to enter the Russian market, the country could face a shortage as early as this March. Russia already has cut the U.S. poultry import quota from 750,000 metric tons last year to 600,000 tons during 2010, 446,400 tons in 2011, and 409,200 tons in 2012. U.S. officials are scheduled to arrive in Moscow next week to discuss U.S. poultry imports and the issues of the U.S. process of chlorine rinses on processed poultry. The United States has halted plans to add South Korea to a list of regions free of foot and mouth disease after an outbreak of the disease was confirmed in the country last week. Regulations had been slated to take effect this month that would have added South Korea to the disease-free list, but the implementation has been delayed indefinitely. chemical makers DuPont Company and BASF Plant Science say that they have reached an agreement on a patent infringement dispute over technology used in herbicides. They have agreed to cross-license patents and dismiss claims and counterclaims against each other in two pending lawsuits. Terms of the agreement were not disclosed. Representative Charlie Rangel, a Democrat from New York, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, says he is unsure whether there will be legislation to reimpose the federal estate tax retroactive to January 1st. His Senate counterpart, Senator Max Baucus, chairman of the Finance Committee, has said he wants a retroactive tax law that will ensure the estate tax remains in effect through 2010. The estate tax was repealed on January 1st for a one-year period. It is scheduled to return on January 1st of 2011. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from the Westchester Group in Champaign, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of agricultural investments for institutional, corporate, and individual clients. Information at 800-607-6888 or at westchester-group.com.
The soybean breeder at the University of Illinois has been looking for cyst nematode resistance. As Todd Gleason reports, the search has been successful, and so has the breeding program.
Most of the soybeans that claim cyst nematode resistance get that genetic code from a single source. It's PI88788. The soybean cyst nematode is a pest of the bean crop that can rob farmers of yield, and they don't even know it's disappearing. The nematode works underground on the root of the plant. Those farmers that do know about the pest often use resistant varieties to combat the nematode, most of which, again, gain that resistance from the same source, PI88788. University of Illinois soybean breeder Brian Deers says those farmers and the industry have gone to the same well once too many times.
What the nematologists are finding is that a lot of the nematodes in the state have basically adapted to that source of resistance, and therefore they're able to now reproduce on these resistant varieties. So we're using some other sources of resistance that give stronger resistance to especially these nematodes that can overcome the 88788 resistance. We've made some progress with this. We've got some experimental lines now that have combined this new source of resistance with good yield. That's been the problem that people have been facing, is that they've been using other sources of resistance, but they haven't been able to get that resistance combined with high yield, which is what the farmers really want.
The new source of resistance is called PI437654. That one has a common name, too. It is Hartwig.
We're also doing some work with a different source of resistance, which is wild soybeans. And we've been able to map a couple genes from wild soybeans that also give resistance. And we're doing some experiments where we're combining genes from these various sources. And it appears that by combining these genes, the effects of these genes act together additively so that we can hopefully get strong, durable resistance by combining these glycine soja or wild soybean genes with, let's say, the 88788 genes.
The wild soybeans were gathered in China and are housed in the USDA soybean germplasm collection on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The collection is one of 30 that is part of the National Plant Germplasm System. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
This is Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. I will be back in 2 minutes with agricultural weather with meteorologist Peter Levitt.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Officials at a laboratory on the University of Illinois campus are trying to make contact with a school they were working with in Haiti, For the last few years, the National Soybean Research Laboratory has been taking part in the school nutrition project at a girls' school near the center of Port-au-Prince, which has been devastated by Tuesday's earthquake. The associate director of the laboratory, Bridget Owens, says they have not been able to reach administrators at the school through phone, email, or personal contacts. Owen also says the consultant who has been working with the project from Chicago lost at least two relatives in the quake. Illinois Governor Pat Quinn says he met with his corrections director twice last summer to insist that only nonviolent criminals be released early under two cost-cutting measures. The Democrat told the Springfield State Journal Register's editorial board today those orders weren't followed. More than 1,700 inmates, some violent, were released last fall. Some served only weeks behind bars. Quinn halted the early release program after the Associated Press revealed it last month, but Quinn says he's satisfied with corrections director Michael Randall's work overall and won't fire him. Advocates for nursing home residents say the next steps are crucial in reforming Illinois' system of long-term care. American Association of Retired Persons State Director Bob Gallo praises today's draft recommendations from a state task force on nursing home safety, but he says the draft needs more detail on staffing issues and services for people with mental illness. The report makes 27 recommendations aimed at ending a pattern of assaults in nursing homes by people with criminal backgrounds and mental illness. Wendy Meltzer of Illinois Citizens for Better Care says protecting nursing home residents will require changes in the behavior of many state agencies and private individuals. Two federal lawsuits have been filed in Urbana federal court over the use of stun guns during an in-school demonstration at Kankakee Junior High School. The suits each seek more than $10 million on behalf of two 12-year-old boys who allege a Kankakee police officer shocked them. They named the police officer, the city of Kankakee, its school district, and its two teachers. Officials with the city and school district haven't returned calls seeking comment. The boys' attorney, James Meeks, says they also want the officer fired and criminal charges filed. I'm Jeff Bosser.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, David.
Before we get to the weather, just a quick question about what did producers out in the 617 area code think of this week's reports?
Well, 617 for the uninitiated is the Massachusetts area. Well, we're not out there in the field, but we see all the reports and stuff. We were a little bit surprised at how high the numbers were, especially on the corn crop. I don't think that's off the wall idea. I think most people had the same impression. I think where it's going to show up eventually is in the stocks reports when part of the crop size that never really gets handled very well is the test weights, in this case, in the corn. And when you have the difference between volumetric bushels and bushels by weight, I think that's all going to work itself out in the future. We'll see. But USDA number is market truth, and that's what we have to live with.
Quite the debate. Meanwhile, they're trying to figure out how to get the corn out of the field in the Dakotas. You got anything to offer them?
Well, no. I wish I could. They, they've had a massive amount of snow cover up there, which usually when they get snow, it's not very deep, but they can't really work that very well. A lot of it is probably going to get salvaged in the spring. I've seen some combines working in the spring in Minnesota a few years back when they couldn't get the crop out. They're just going to have to hope that they don't get too much crop loss in the process. We're going to have warm weather for this next week, and we'll probably start to see some of that snow cover vanish. And the only problem with that is what is the state of ground if they get the snow down enough? You want the ground hard when you take the combines out there, and it'll be soggy. So I don't have a solution.
Well, isn't it freeze-thaw for the next little while? Maybe they could run those combines at 3 in the morning.
There's an idea. We are looking for a mild week, and we're not looking for any significant precipitation for the next week. And we're going to see temperatures averaging anywhere from 6 to 12 degrees above normal in both the west and the eastern Corn Belt states. So we're going to see that snow cover decline, and we're going to see moisture start to leak out, and maybe we can get a little drier weather. But at this time of year, getting the ground dry after you've had snow on it, even with mild temperatures, doesn't help much.
Just two sentences on where the big concern is.
Globally, we're in good shape, and that's nice. They've had a lot of rain in Brazil and Argentina. In Argentina, the rain has been mostly beneficial. They've been still recovering from drought. In Brazil, the rain is has mixed blessings.
Okay.
It's maintaining a rich moisture supply, but it's also been tough on field work there. And this is their heart of their growing season now. It's summertime down there. And so far, I would say it's a fair plus for the weather in South America.
Thanks, Peter.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt.